Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Welcome to my world and our global warming update. Today, freezing temperatures hit northern Florida. Readings dropped below zero across West Virginia. And snow made mountain highways back east treacherous as a very cold wave swept southward. Even North Carolina got a rare seaside snow in more than 2 feet. Fell near the Great Lakes. Well, so much for the global warming cause. And now on to something more important. Do you know what the degrees of euthanasia are? Euthanasia is killing someone for supposedly for merciful or medical reasons, kill somebody. And there are 3 degrees. First degree is voluntary, where people say, I want to be put to death, or I want to be killed, I want to end my life, because I don't think my family wants to take care of me, or I'm lonely, or I feel my life has no value, or I want the easy way out, I don't like suffering, whatever, for whatever reason. First degree is voluntary. Second degree is involuntary. It's done without knowledge or consent. The person being put to death doesn't know that it's happening or hasn't agreed to it. And third degree is forced. It's against the victim's wishes. And the news is out. You've probably heard that in Holland now they are working to make it legal to kill babies, newborn babies. And one hospital has admitted that it does kill newborn babies. And so is that first degree or second degree or third degree? Well, the Netherlands, if you recall, just a few years ago, became the first country in the world to legalize euthanasia. And right now, according to the law, doctors can lawfully end a life only at the patient's request. Now, is that first degree or second degree or third degree? What is that? That's first degree, right? And pro-lifers often point out that there's a slippery slope, and even that is a bit unnecessary because it's just wrong to kill someone who's not been convicted of a capital crime. So the slippery slope, if you want to call it that, okay, but as long as you realize that the very first slip is murder. So that's murder. You don't have the right to kill yourself. You don't have the right to kill someone else who's not guilty. Intentionally killing someone who's not been convicted of a capital crime is wrong. By the way, our phone number here at Bob and Yart Live, 800-8-N-Yart. That's 800-836-9278. Or if you're in Colorado, you could get in ahead of the rest of the pack, 303-463-7789. Okay, so first degree is voluntary. I want to be put to death. And second degree, involuntary. So now this Dutch hospital admits that it has euthanized newborn babies. Now they're babies who are sick, or they say terminally ill, and that's what people think. Jack Kevorkian, remember he was killing all those people in Michigan, and he's in jail now. And the media kept saying he was killing people who were terminally ill, and that's not true. Terminally ill means that you're ill, and your illness is killing you. Now, someone may be incurably ill. I have all kinds of friends, people I know, who have diseases who could live long and happy lives with their disease. And their disease makes life more difficult, but they're not terminally ill. They're permanently ill in some way, but they're not terminally ill. So this Dutch hospital says that the babies they've killed are terminally ill, but since the media is unreliable as they use that term and are willing to let euthanasia advocates twist that term, I don't know what to make of that. But they say that they have been killing newborn babies. And this hospital, it's called the Groningen Academic Hospital. They say they're merely trying to bring out into the open something that's already happening commonly in the Netherlands and around the world. And I think that's probably true. They want the Dutch government to approve guidelines legalizing euthanasia on newborns. All right. Now, I recall back in the 80s, was it? I've been in the pro-life movement since the late 80s. And I recall, maybe somebody out there knows more about this. I did a little bit of searching and haven't come up with anything. But I heard that the Reagan administration threatened hospitals back in the 80s by basically saying they would cut off funding for any hospital that killed newborn babies. Because, you know, liberal Christians, they don't understand right and wrong. And typically, they turn right and wrong on its head. So as far as people dying, if they're sick, and if you die dying, it's not immoral to let someone die. If you're dying, it's okay to die. You can die. In fact, we also often advertise at Denver Bible Church, it's the place where sick people can die. It's okay to die at our church. If you need a miraculous healing, you have to go to a funny church or something. I don't know. Go to another church. But at Denver Bible Church, it's okay to die. And it is. It's not immoral to let people die. In fact, people die all the time. But what is immoral is to kill people for whatever reason, to solve whatever problem you have. If there are times in the Bible, there are times when it's right to kill people, like if they're convicted of a capital crime or in self-defense or the imminent defense of others or in a just war, there are times when it's acceptable to kill others. But you don't kill people who are innocent just to solve problems. Like, well, I'm too sad. I'm too lonely. My family will think I'm a burden. I'm afraid to know what my family will think of me if they have to take care of me. And that's what motivated a lot of Jack the Dripper's patients. Or I have a lot of pain. You know, pain management. Doctors and patients need to improve their efforts regarding pain management. You don't kill people because they're in a lot of pain. Because when that becomes the norm, which is what liberals advocate in this country, when that becomes the norm, then you have, well, suicide is one of the top 10 killers of young people in America. And you have a 14-year-old girl who's boyfriend just left her for her best friend, and she is experiencing more pain than anyone else in the world at that moment. I mean, to her, the pain cannot get any greater. And to a society where the adults say it's acceptable to solve your problems by killing yourself, it's acceptable to solve problems with suicide, then young people take their cue from their leaders and their culture, and suicide becomes increasingly prevalent even among the young or among anybody who's suffering. And in fact, crimes that end in suicides become more commonplace. And murder suicides, like Harrison Klebold, because people tend to rebel within the boundaries that society defines for them. That's how they tend to rebel. So back in the 50s, you know, young people rebelled by drinking a couple beers and trying to get a little bit intimate. Today, in 2004, young people rebel with ecstasy or crack, cocaine, homosexuality, abortion, suicide, murder, suicide. That's much more common because ideas have consequences. So we have here this hospital in the Netherlands admits to killing three babies last year. And they said that they had the support of all eight of the teaching hospitals in their country in asking the government to legalize euthanasia for newborns. And the hospital said that studies have shown, and I'm sure this is true, that pediatricians were in favor of intentionally ending the life of a newborn who is suffering greatly and terminally ill. And there's that terminally ill. And, you know, if a baby is dying, if he's terminally ill, well, the baby can die. That's tragic, but it's not immoral. It's not wrong. There's no guilt in a baby dying. It's sad, but it's okay for terminally ill people to die. And children, it's not okay to kill them. So if someone is unable to feed themselves, then it's our obligation to love your neighbor. It's your obligation to feed them if they are unable to feed themselves. This is where liberals turn right and wrong on its head. If someone will not work, now what if someone will not work and they're hungry because they will not work? Now what do liberals do in that case? Well, in that case, they want to feed them, yeah, right? They want to give them welfare. If somebody just will not work, it's an alcoholic, it's a bum, it's a wino, drug addict, they won't work and they want to party and they don't want to work. Well, the New Testament says that it's a command. He who will not work shall not eat. That's a command. Because in that case, hunger is a great tool to turn someone's life around. Because you get hungry and it makes you think twice about your chosen lifestyle. But when, let's say you're Denver Rescue Mission and you run that, you're Del Maxfield, the guy who runs Denver Rescue Mission, and you say, well, that verse in the New Testament, he who will not work shall not eat, we don't go by that verse. We don't implement that. And that's what he said here on this program, Bob and Yurt Live, on a couple of occasions back some years ago. He said, okay. So then what you do is you kill people on the installment plan because you're feeding people who will not work. You're helping to destroy whatever dignity or self-respect, shreds of those things they may have. And you're basically killing them on the installment plan. You're enabling them so that many homeless shelters and rescue missions become enablers. Unlike Step 13 downtown Denver, Bob Cote, where you've got to work. You're going to go there, you have to work. You got to work, you pay room and board, and you cannot be drunk every night or get high every night and go to the shelter. You can't do that. They kick you out. And so that's honoring the command that God gave in the New Testament, he who will not work shall not eat. But a newborn who is born, let's say, seriously deformed, birth defects, and the baby, maybe the baby can't eat, and he needs a feeding tube. Now, a feeding tube is not an iron lung. It's not keeping someone alive with technology. It's just feeding. I mean, any baby needs to be fed. You know, a baby's not going to go to the table and feed itself. You have to feed a baby. So if you use a bottle, if you breastfeed, a feeding tube, food and water is what we are required to give to those who cannot feed themselves and keep them warm. So shelter, clothing, food and water, we're required to do that for those who cannot do it themselves. And you know how the media reports on that? They say, well, the doctors decided to remove artificial nourishment and hydration. That's how the American press typically reports when someone is being killed in a hospital or a doctor's office, and they're denying the person food and water so that they're starving them to death. They won't even say they're withholding food and water. They won't say that. They say that they are withholding artificial nourishment and hydration. What do you mean artificial nourishment? What is that? Well, it's this like milky oatmeal we've been. Oh, it's oatmeal. Okay, artificial nourishment. And the hydration, what is that? Is that like dehydrated H2O or something? What is that's water. Oh, you're denying. Oh, so you're starving them to death. You're denying them food and water. Why don't you say food and water instead of artificial nourishment and hydration? So that's what we are up against. Of course, the enemy, when they're on the slippery slope, the first step of the slippery slope is murder. But then their lust for blood, it never ends. And they typically want to kill more and more and more. And the Dutch are doing it. The Germans did it. Even before the Germans started to kill the Jews, they were killing the Aryans, killing the Germans in the German euthanasia program. You could read about it in a classic book called The Sign for Cain. The German euthanasia program, they started killing Germans who were hospitalized, institutionalized, mentally disturbed, children who were in kids who were in reform schools. They started killing them, and they killed them by the tens of thousands. And after, once the wall came down, the Berlin Wall, and the Soviet Union began to fall apart, Western researchers got millions and millions of pages of research material documents from Germany, from Berlin, that were trapped in East Berlin when the Soviets took over. And books have been being published, scholarly books, popular books. One book is called Cleansing the Fatherland. And they point out that the Germans had a plan where you couldn't euthanize someone unless they were severely ill and you needed three doctors to sign to agree that this patient needed to be euthanized. And so in the book, Cleansing the Fatherland, which I read some years ago, they have documentation that's still left over from the Nazis, their actual paperwork. And they had one young boy, maybe he was 7 years old or so, and they had to give the reason why they're euthanizing him, and the doctors, three doctors had a sign, and the reason they put was his chronic bedwetter. Chronic bedwetter, and they killed him. They gassed him to death. In fact, the gas chambers went up, not in the concentration camps to kill the Jews. That's a misnomer. They went up a couple years before that in German hospitals and institutions to kill Germans. And they killed well over 100,000 Germans before they started killing the Jews. And so they were good at it by then. And the medical community, its heart was hardened. So, which is one of the reasons it's so bizarre in Israel today, that in Israel, abortion is legal if you get three doctors or three judges to sign. And I only wish that they could realize the irony and the absurdity of that, because that's what led to the Holocaust. Because when you start killing people, oh, we're going to kill. First, the Netherlands, when they legalized euthanasia, it was first degree euthanasia, voluntary, only at the patient's request. And the pro-lifers and the Christians, anyone with more than a single brain cell functioning, says, do you realize what you're doing? It's wrong. It's wrong to kill innocent people to solve problems. It's wrong to intentionally kill an individual person. Here's this innocent person. I'm going to kill him to solve a problem. It's wrong. And not only that, but because of sin, because of the human condition, once you start killing people, there's no logical place to stop. So once you legalize voluntary euthanasia, first degree euthanasia, you are going to move to second degree euthanasia. You are. Because the pressures will be overwhelming, because you're sinners and you've already thrown out thou shalt not murder. That's no longer your boundary. So you think you're going to hold on to this artificial boundary now? We're only going to kill some innocent people? You're going to knock down your own boundary. So here we are 3 years later, and All 8 teaching hospitals in the Netherlands together are asking the government to legalize euthanizing, killing newborn babies. That's second degree euthanasia. And in Holland, I've heard the reports on and off for the past few years that elderly people, one of the fears when they've been surveyed, one of their significant fears in life is that they're going to be euthanized against their wishes. That's one of the fears that they live with. So a health ministry official there said that the government is already working on guidelines for child euthanasia, and they expect to present a bill to Parliament early next year. And a Dutch pro-life group, and praise the Lord that there's a Dutch pro-life group, it's called Cry for Life. That's a great name for a group, Cry for Life. They're strongly opposed, of course, to these measures, and saying that giving society the right to decide cases in which it can legally kill innocent people is wrong. And their chairman, Cry for Life's chairman, Bert Doornbos, said it's another step on the slippery slope of Holland's euthanasia and abortion programs. So I do praise the Lord. I'm thankful that there are pro-lifers out there, but of course their voice is small compared to the bloodthirst that's common by fallen man. And, you know, when they say that the one thing that man learns from history is that we learn nothing from history, that's pretty much true. I mean, the Nazis slaughtered 6 million Jews and millions of other people lost their lives because of the Germans. And the principles that went into the Nazi Party are pretty much unknown today. They're unknown. What kind of laws? What motivated them? You know, the Nazis, they were against Christmas. So they got rid of Christmas. They replaced it with a winter holiday. You remember that? The Nazis were the Germans in the 30s. They were against citizens owning guns. So they outlawed the private ownership of guns. And what that does is that turns a country into a police state. So the Nazis outlawed citizens couldn't own guns. Right? That's what the Germans did. And you know what? After the war, how many years ago? 20 years ago or so, when we began to adopt our own gun control laws, our first major gun control law was the Nazi law, virtually verbatim, translated into English. We adopted their law. They're, you know, early on, the early stages of gun control. And the Nazis were socialists, where the government, read from Mein Kampf, and the government should use its resources to take care of children because the rights of children are more significant and they are more weighty than the rights of adults. Now, you know who wrote that? Adolf Hitler. Yeah, when Hillary's book, remember Hillary wrote a book, it came out, what was it called? It Takes a Village to Satisfy My Husband. Is that what it was called? No, that wasn't it. It Takes a Village to Raise an Idiot. Was that what it was called? No, The Village Idiot. What was it called? Oh, It Takes a Village to Raise a Child. That was it, right? Just It Takes a Village. That's what she titled it. It Takes a Village. So the day that book came out, we had it. We showed it on. I had Bob and Your Live used to be a TV show back in the Stone Age. It was a TV show, and the cameras zoomed in. I had the book right on the set on my desk, and I said, "I'm going to read you a few quotes out of Hillary's book." And I read the quotes, and I said, "How evil and only a twisted mind could write these words." And we zoomed into the quotes, and there were things like the rights of children supersede the rights of adults, and the government must use its resources to take care of children. And I was saying, you know, you got to be evil to do this because you're just using children as a political ploy to further your evil political agenda. That's what you're doing. And so some liberals called in. They were angry at me. How could you say that about Hillary? And so I'm talking to one liberal, and I'm holding up the book, and the dust cover, the dust jacket falls off the book. I say, oh, no, the cover fell off. And I look at the book, and it's not Hillary's book. It's a different book. And the camera zooms in, and we zoom into the book, and it's Mein Kampf by Adolf Hitler. And everybody thought, as I was excerpting the book, they all thought Hillary wrote it because it sounded awfully like things Hillary would say. Now, Hitler hated the Jews, so just replace that with right-wing Christians. You know, Hillary talks about the right-wing conspiracy, the vast right-wing conspiracy that has to be stopped. So take out Hitler's hatred of the Jews and replace it with today's hatred of the right-wing and right-wing Christians. And not only did the Nazis outlaw Christmas, instead of Christmas, you had a winter holiday. And so forget the Merry Christmas and Christmas trees and forget Christ altogether. Well, that's what's happening today, right? CBS Sunday morning had their anchor. He's decided he's going to play a song for the audience, the nationwide TV audience. Now, what's the CBS news program on Sunday morning? I never watch it, so I don't recall. He starts playing White Christmas, and he's singing, I'm dreaming of a white holiday. And he sings White Holiday instead of White Christmas. And people at Denver Bible Church, we thought it was a joke. It's a joke, right? We thought he was going to laugh, a punchline. No, sang the whole song, I'm dreaming of a white holiday, on CBS Sunday morning. That's how they sang it. Unbelievable. The hatred of Jesus Christ is so severe. Forget about kicking Christ out of the holiday. They're afraid to mention the name of the holiday, Christmas. You know, we've reached a point where tens of millions of young Americans will not know the name of their national holiday if it were up to the government or their government schools to tell them the name of the holiday. They wouldn't know it. That's how hostile they are against Christianity. But they're very open to Planned Parenthood, a group that kills unborn children. Yeah, Planned Parenthood. You know how many kids they killed? Let's see. Last year, I got it right here, 244,628 babies they killed. Just Planned Parenthood. That's a lot of kids they killed, right? Fewer abortion mills, but more abortions. Fewer abortion mills, we think, because it's getting harder to staff them because of the pro-life work around the country. But an increase in 6% of the abortions done by Planned Parenthood last year. How's that? Okay. So, hey, this is Bob Enyart, pastor of Denver Bible Church, inviting you to come on out to church Sunday. You can call us for directions or check out our website, kgov.com. And if you live anywhere near Arvada, think about Maranatha Christian Center, a great school for kids up to 12th grade, 303-431-5653, 431-5653.